You're listening to NHPR News. It's 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. This past spring, after a contentious debate involving cyclists, a police chief, and motorists, selectmen in the seacoast town of Rye voted in favor of requiring cyclists to ride single file on all town roads, and they even set up flashing traffic signs to let everyone know about the new rule. While the decision may have appeased drivers who had long complained about cyclists riding two or even three abreast, those on bikes felt unfairly singled out and said that the far bigger safety problem is distracted drivers, chatting on cell phones, texting, and just generally not paying attention to others on the road. And so it goes, these common arguments heard everywhere between bike riders and drivers, but the two groups are going to have to learn to get along. Across the U.S., more major cities are instituting bike sharing programs, which make bikes available for quick trips throughout city streets. And even in smaller communities, like in New Hampshire, programs encouraging biking for commuting and exercise are on the rise. Today in The Exchange, travel tensions between those on two wheels and those on four. We'll look at the relations between motorists and cyclists and how they might be improved. Let's hear from you. 1-800-892-6477 is the exchange number. What do you think? Should laws be tougher on bikes? Or should police keep a closer eye on cars? Or would relations be better if roads really had room for everyone? Our number again is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. We have three guests this hour. Joining us from Portland, Maine is Pat Moody, Manager of Public Affairs and Traffic Safety for AAA Northern New England. Pat, good to have you. Thanks for your time.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Also with us in studio, Dave Topham, Director of the Bike Walk Alliance of New Hampshire. And Dave, welcome back.
Thank you, Laura. Great to be here.
Also with us, Larry Keniston, Bicycle and Pedestrian Coordinator for the New Hampshire Department of Transportation. And Larry, welcome back to you, too. Good to see you.
Laura, thank you for having me again.
Well, and I want to start with you, David, I think, but hear from everybody. You know, the numbers for biking look good. More people are out there for recreation or for commuting. But more bikes on the road can mean more tensions come up. What do you think where we are at now, David? How would you describe where we are in terms of this relationship between cyclists and motorists? Has it gotten better or worse?
Well, to a certain degree, I think it has become better in more recent years. We have, obviously, the fact that bicycles are vehicles on the road. It's a shared roadway concept. The roads are built for transportation, getting people, that's not just vehicles, but people from one point to another, regardless of whether they're walking, bicycling, or using a car, even public transit. So when you tie the whole thing together, we have to get along together and use the current facilities the way they are. They can't all be 100% improved to make bike lanes and dedicated facilities. So sharing the road and, little courtesy can go a long way many times, never mind all the laws, which we'll get into.
Well, and it's interesting to hear you say what you just said, though. Roads are built for transportation. That's interesting because most people would say, roads are built for cars.
That's right, but we have to get people from point A to point B. And that's how they get there. One concept nationwide, it's called complete streets, that if roads are being rebuilt or new construction, that all aspects of transportation should be included in that overall concept, including transit, bus lines or even light rail in some places. But basically to make the community livable for people and enjoyable.
What do you think, Pat Moody, again with AAA, how would you describe the relationship where we're at now in terms of bikers and motorists?
I would agree with Dave. There's been a lot of improvement. I think I'm looking at a figure here. The U.S. Census Bureau said the number of bicycle commuters nationwide increased 40% since 2000.
Wow, so, that's a lot, 40% over the last 10 years. So more bikes on the road. Go ahead, Pat.
Yeah, and there's going to be more vehicles on the road, too. So we're seeing a lot more congestion. So there's a lot more opportunity for intersections with bicycles, vehicles, or pedestrians. So it's definitely a shared road, but it's also a shared responsibility that everybody follow the rules and understand the rules and share the road.
Follow the rules and understand the rules. Easier said than done, I think, in some instances. Do you think, Larry, that bicyclists sometimes, consider that they don't really have to follow the rules because they're small, they're not taking up that much space, and after all, they're not a car?
Well, I think that's true. I think a lot of bicyclists They just simply don't understand the rules. They don't understand that they are vehicles. In fact, we've already heard the concept that there are bicycles out there and they're vehicles. Well, the law in every state recognizes that bicycles are indeed vehicles. They have all the rights and responsibilities of any other vehicle.
And what does that mean exactly then? They are vehicles. They have rights and responsibilities of every vehicle.
They must follow all the vehicular laws. They must stop at stop signs, red lights, no right turn on red. No passing on the right unless there's a lane for them. Any law that applies to motor vehicles applies to bicycles.
How well do you think most cyclists understand that?
I don't think they do. I think it's an education that we're trying to promote at the New Hampshire Department of Transportation. It's a learning curve, and as new bicyclists come on the road, additional bicyclists, young bicyclists, and especially as we have right here in Concord, we have a lot of immigrants who clearly don't understand the law.
So. Well, and that 40% figure that Pat gave us is pretty remarkable. That's a big growth.
Yes, it is.
What do you think about that? And I have to say, Larry says this, the critique of bikers not understanding comes from Larry being an avid cyclist. So he's not raining on anybody there. What do you think, David?
Well, to be sure, the education aspect is something that through our Bike Walk Alliance we're very much into. We work with the schools, elementary schools, we're involved in the Safe Routes to School program. So there's the non-infrastructure component with that. And also we work with the League of American Bicyclists in Washington, D.C. So we have courses that are run leading to certification of cyclists. So as vehicular cycling plays into the factor big time. And one of the key points being that bicyclists fare best when they are handled their bikes and treated as vehicle operators, following the rules of the road, doing what is predictable, and basically know what you're doing and do it right.
Although sometimes, speaking now as a bicyclist, sometimes cars honk at you when you're acting like a vehicle. They want you kind of shunted to the side and out of the way.
That is true. But it's also a fact that a vehicular cyclist, I don't mean the children, like basically the under 16 crowd. I'm talking about people using the bike for transportation, even recreational cyclists who know how to handle a bike, not get in the middle of an intersection and have the chain fall off or fall off the bike because you didn't unclip from the pedals or something. We've seen that happen too. But basically, if people know how to handle a bicycle properly and they get into motor traffic, if they use the lane going to their destination, typically the right-hand side of the lane to their destination, that's where they should be. That's where they're predictable, not to interfere with the flow of traffic. And that's where they belong by law.
Well, let me get our listeners involved, gentlemen, and then we'll talk some more. Our number here in the exchange, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Today in the exchange, we're looking at relations between cyclists and motorists. As we've heard, a lot more people are hopping on bikes, either for commuting or for recreation, but with more bikers sharing the road come increased tensions between those traveling on two wheels and those on four. Join us. What do you think? Should laws be tougher on bikes? Should police keep a closer eye on cars and how they treat bicyclists? Would relations be better if roads were better and really did have room for everybody? Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us a short email if you'd like, or post a comment on our Facebook page. One more time, that number, 1-800-892-6477. And gentlemen, a couple emails came in even before the program began, and I want to go to one of them. This is from Ken in Farmington. He says, I think the tension between cyclists and drivers is easily blamed on both sides, but mostly a lack of education. I am a cyclist and a driver, but I've had a lot of experiences with cyclists on the wrong side of the road, ignoring traffic lights, stop signs, etc. I've also had drivers honk at me while I'm riding in the shoulder. One of the things that aggravates me is having people shout at me to ride on the other side of the road when I'm on the right, where I belong. To wrap it up, Ken says, I'm reminded of a piece of advice I saw on a cycling website many years ago. Since most bike commuters are also drivers, you've surely had the experience of thinking those darn bicyclists don't do the things that made you think that. He says that's good advice for cyclists. Ken, great thoughts. I wonder what you think, Pat Moody, this idea of, first of all, education and problems are blamed on both sides.
Yeah, it's an overlapping strategy that we need to use here. Education, absolutely. And, the League of American Bicyclists is a comment that Dave made earlier. AAA's also partnered up with them, and we've developed this excellent website. It's an educational resource. for cyclists and motorists, giving them tips and basic understanding of, you know, how people should be traveling on the road and sharing the road. And that website is sharetheroad.aaa.com. You know, this is a good way to reach out. But the other two strategies are engineering. Like you said, these roads are in rough shape. You've got people swerving around potholes, maybe not even have markings on the road to understand where they should be. And then the third E, and we call them three E's, education, engineering, and enforcement, and making sure that the laws are being enforced out there and there's visibility, there's law enforcement out there enforcing these laws, whether it be for bicyclists, pedestrians, or motorists.
So what are the three E's again? Education, enforcement, and?
Engineering.
Engineering, meaning the roads themselves.
Yeah, meeting our friends at DOT, right?
Not to put Larry on the spot or anything.
Yeah.
But what about the other point that Ken makes? You know, he says, one of the things that aggravates me is having people shout at me to ride on the other side of the road when I'm on the right where I belong. I've gotten hollered at, too, by motorists who don't really seem to understand that I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. What do you think? You're with AAA, Pat.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. They don't understand. They don't know the rules, the laws. People think that bikes belong on sidewalks. They don't. So that's where that educational component is needing to get out there. We need to get out there in the media and through all channels possible. So,
well, that's what I wanted to ask you. Yeah, you know, that you talked about education and Share the Road, AAA.com and so forth. But to some extent, I'm wondering how much these educational efforts are preaching to the choir. You know, how do you get where the people who really aren't engaged and are just doing it because, you know, they have no other way of getting to work and so forth. How do you reach those folks, Pat?
You know, I think one of the things that we do a fairly okay job with the younger population, the kids in driver ed now over the last few years. I think the experienced driver that hasn't seen these bike lanes, or, you know, they weren't brought up with the understanding of what a Sharrow is or a bike lane and how to interact with bikes on the road. I think that's the bigger challenge. How do you reach those folks? And that's something that we need to come up with, yeah.
All right. Well, we'll talk more about that after a short break. Get thoughts from our guests in studio on that and start taking more of your calls at 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. We'll be right back.
It's The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio. Good morning. NHPR is already making plans for after the primaries, putting together a congressional and gubernatorial debates in partnership with the union leader, the Business and Industry Association, and NHPTV. The debates are next month, but we want to know what your questions are now. What economic concerns do you want the candidates to address? Email us at debate@nhpr.org. Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, and from Gibson's Bookstore in Concord, welcoming author Tom Ryan and his dog Atticus, September 6th at 7 o'clock. Stories and questions, followed by a signing of his book, Following Atticus. And from Novus Engineering, an employee-owned company with a 23-year legacy of collaboration, responsiveness, and community involvement. Information at novusengineering.com. This is New Hampshire Public Radio.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at the sometimes uneasy relationship between cyclists who say cars rule the road and drivers who say bikers defy the law. As we're hearing, progress has been made in recent years, but as more cyclists get out there, we're also hearing that there's plenty of room for improvement, education, and understanding on both sides. 1-800-892-6477 is the number for you to join us. 1-800-892-NHPR. Or email us, exchange@nhpr.org, or post a comment on our Facebook page. Do you think that the laws and enforcement should be tougher on cyclists? Should police be keeping closer track of what motorists do vis-a-vis people on bikes? Would relations be pretty much resolved if the roads were better and really had room for everybody? Again, we'd love your thoughts at 1-800-892-6477. And before we go to our callers, gentlemen, I did want to ask you, Dave Topham and Larry Keniston, about what Pat from AAA was talking about before the break. This idea that, you know, Dave, everybody has their educational efforts, but to some extent, you're preaching to the choir. I mean, how do you get where you really need to get in terms of this message of follow the rules, share the road?
That's a great point and something that we have to deal with all the time. As Pat mentioned, the Triple E, the Education, Engineering, and Enforcement, since 2004, we've had an internal program which we've called IEEE, Inform, Educate, and Enforce. Those of us in the bicycling community, whether with the League of American Bicyclists, Bike and Walk Alliance, whatever, all the classes that we can run, we can tell other cyclists, say on our bike rides, hey, you don't run that red light. You get in the proper lane. People might then just comply and do it. Again, the education aspect, the classes we run, that's all well and fine, but we cannot enforce the laws.
Well, the other thing is the people who come to your classes are already primed to hear that message. That's my point.
Right, exactly. So when we get to the point, and again, our problems exist on both sides, and I don't profess to have all the answers for anything, believe me, but it still comes down to the point that when we can only go so far with the inform and the education, reaching, you say, might be preaching to the choir in many places. If you have errant bicyclists doing something repeatedly wrong, that's where we have implemented a connection with every police department around the state.
Really?
With, on our website, Bike Walk Alliance website, we have the non-emergency number of every police department. Okay. So if, for example, if we have a routine problem, and it has happened a couple times, if we have a routine problem where you have what we call the road warrior type bicyclists, they take delight. I won't say this is not the majority. This is a very small percentage, but they set a very poor example for the whole bicycling community where the rules don't apply to them. They're special. They're going to run the red lights. They go on the wrong side of the street. They'll bike down the sidewalk at 20 miles an hour with a mother pushing a baby carriage. No, cutting off people in crosswalks. So if we have a certain pattern of that, we can simply call the local police department and say, Chief, at such a time, would you take care of this matter on a certain street? We expect there could be a problem there. You observe. You take action. Problem solved.
Wow, so cyclists turning in other cyclists who make cyclists look bad.
Exactly.
Wow, that's serious.
We don't like to do it. You know, motorists can do crazy things, bicyclists can do it. But when people think they're special and above the law, that's when we have a problem.
All right, well, lots of calls. Pat Moody, Dave Topham, Larry Keniston. I did want to go to you real quickly, too, though, this idea of, you know, everybody talks about education, but how do you avoid just preaching to the choir?
Well, one of the things we want is more bicyclists out there, more pedestrians using the road, because that means less cars, and the bicycles and the pedestrians take up less space. Even if you take into account the speed that they're going, they take up less time and space than an automobile. So one of the things we want to do is encouragement. That's really another E that Pat began on with the education, engineering, and enforcement. So as we encourage more cyclists to get out there, I think we'll see a shift where people begin to understand the law, because there's really only one way to do it, and that's to do it through the existing traffic laws and treat the bicycle as a vehicle.
Did you want to jump in on something else there? No. Okay, you looked like you wanted to go ahead and say something else. All right, we'll go to the callers and maybe it'll come up later. Our number again is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Waiting in Newfane, Vermont is Earl. Hi, Earl. You're on the air. Thanks for hanging on.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I'm all in favor of bicyclists on the road. But the other day I had an experience where I was coming up the side of a mountain and it was pretty dangerous. And cars were coming down the hill at about 50 miles an hour into my lane. And there were bicyclists on their right. And I couldn't understand why they were coming into my lane. But the answer occurred to me a couple of days later when I was on the road in my car going the other way. And I encountered all these bicyclists riding in double, almost triple file in front of me.
Wow.
As if to dare me to honk my horn or sit behind them. I didn't understand why they were so arrogant about it. And it made me very angry. And ultimately, I just had to swerve into the other lane to get around them. And I think that one of the answers might be to put more traffic signs. Something as simple as bicyclists must ride in single file.
Which they did in Rye, yeah.
Right.
Go ahead.
So, I'm not against bicyclists or anything, but I think that they adopt a certain attitude, if you will, and it's unnecessary. I think they bring problems upon themselves.
It is unnerving when you have to swerve around
really
and go
is.
To the other lane. Sure, absolutely. Thanks for calling in, Earl. What do you think, Pat Moody?
Yeah, I'm not sure what the state law is in
pertaining to that, but I've had the same experience myself. And, you know, whether it's it seems almost like a bike race where you've got three or four bikes, maybe not four bikes wide, but at least two or three bikes wide. And it's a curvy, windy road that really doesn't have any place to pass safely. So you either have to hang back or kind of risk yourself and everybody else to try to get around them. So I probably bounce that to Dave for knowing what the actual law is. As far as a best practice, I would say it would be single file.
Yeah, I know Dave absolutely is Mr. Single File. You said that on this show a number of times. But did you want to jump in, Dave? And then Larry, to you too. But go ahead, David.
Well, talking about New Hampshire particularly, the law is that bicyclists can ride two abreast within a single lane if not impeding traffic coming from the rear. I'm not talking about the town laws, which are on town roads, but the state law is that you can ride two abreast, but not impeding traffic. And again, the situation, as Earl mentioned, for Vermont, I don't know the speeds involved directly, how fast the bicyclists were going versus how fast he was going in the car. He said about 50. But at a high speed, a bicyclist does have to move out from the edge of the road for road it has, whether it's debris, catch basins, whatever. And if, even in the New Hampshire law, if a situation is such where a bicyclist cannot share the lane with a motorist, and I use the example of a construction zone typically where you have low-speed traffic, relatively short distance, the bicyclist should take the lane because it's not safe, there's not enough space for a motorist to pass with at least 3 feet worth of clearance.
Sometimes cars don't seem to realize why you may not be hugging the shoulder. It may be because if you did hug the shoulder, you'd fall over because the condition of the shoulder is so poor. Sometimes they don't seem to realize that.
That could be. You know, bicyclists will see things close up to the road that a motorist may not see.
Yeah.
So it's situational awareness, and you have to balance everything out. It's not one flat rule that covers everything.
What do you think about Earl's story there, Larry? Again, you're with New Hampshire Department of Transportation. Earl called from Vermont, but go ahead, and then I have another question for you too, Larry.
Yeah, well, as Dave said, generally bicyclists aren't out there to impede traffic. They're not allowed to impede traffic unless it's necessary to their safety. There's a lot of times, especially going downhill, the bicyclist is moving at a pretty good speed. It's really not safe for them to be hugging the shoulder. At the same time, they realize that you don't have enough room to pass, and you may not realize that you don't have enough room to pass plus the 3 feet, which is RSA 143A, or 265 143A. So
that's the law that says you have to pass
with 3 feet.
With
of clearance.
3 feet.
Correct.
So the bicyclist doesn't feel threatened or blown off their bike by you passing too close.
So section 265.144 spells out those conditions in which bicyclists can move out into the lane. They can take the full lane in cases where their safety depends on it. There could be glass in the road. Their shoulder could be unacceptable. So I do 80% of my traveling on an automobile, and I rarely find a situation where a bicyclist is impeding traffic without good reason.
Because again, as the bicyclist, you can see the cracks in the and the bumps in the shoulder that the motorist might not see. I understand Earl's point, though, Larry. I had a similar example about a year ago. I was driving home from Keene, so from Keene to Concord, early in the morning, and there was a bike touring group that was pretty much on the road from Keene to Hillsboro, and they were all stretched out. And boy, Route 9, there's not much of a shoulder there. And they were, I felt, pretty far out, and I did feel unnerved, as Earl did, having to really go into the other lane to get around these folks. And, you know, once or twice you don't mind, but from Keene to Hillsboro is a long way to be constantly swerving around bicyclists. I didn't think that was a good choice of a road for them.
Well, the solution there is, as a motorist, just be patient, wait behind them until you have a safe place to pass. Bicyclists recognize when you have a safe place to pass, and they'll move over and let you go. But also think about, what if, Laura, they were umpteen cars out there instead in your way? They would certainly take up more space. Bicyclists, when they're traveling around like that, they travel around in a what we call a green fashion. They have a low footprint, small footprint on the state and on the highway. So it's something that we want to see. We want to encourage this.
So cars should be a little more thankful.
Sure.
From creating the extra space and the extra parking space downtown. All right. Well, Earl, thanks a lot for that call. Our number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us a short email, exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And let's go to Newport next. Dan is on the air. Hi, Dan. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, Laura.
Morning.
there's so much discussion this morning, I hardly know where to begin. But I think what I'd like to do is just read to you folks what RSA 265 is. It's just two sentences. And it says that drivers to exercise due care when approaching a bicycle. Every driver of a vehicle when approaching a bicyclist shall ensure the safety and protection of the bicyclist and shall exercise due care by leaving a reasonable and prudent distance between the vehicle and the bicycle. This distance shall presume to be reasonable and prudent if it is at least 3 feet when the vehicle is traveling at 30 miles per hour or less, with one additional foot clearance required for every 10 miles per hour over 30 miles per hour. So that means 4 feet at 40 and 5 feet at 50. I ride my bike almost every day, and there's not a day that goes by that motor vehicles go by me that don't abide by this state statute. And it's very unnerving, and I think that the motor vehicling public just is not aware of it, and they total disregard.
Yeah, and it's that education piece. How do you get the word out there?
Well, we had a tragedy in the Lake Sunapee region a year ago, June, when a couple folks that I ride with were run over. One was killed and one was...
oh, my goodness, how terrible.
Had crippling injuries. A few months later, another young woman was run over and killed. After those incidents, I became quite concerned and started to initiate an education program for signage about this law. And we've had signs up in Newport and Sunapee and Newberry and Croydon and Grantham and Springfield, the towns of the cities of Hanover and the cities of Claremont. And we've also sat down with the New Hampshire Department of Transportation to try to adopt a statewide standardized language for advising motorists of this law. And we've been very successful. The Department of Transportation has been very helpful in helping us through this process. And just yesterday, they approved a pilot program for us to put some of these signs up at different locations in the state.
Oh, Dan, I'm so sorry. That's awful. And good for you for working to get the word out there. I want to let Dave Tompa jump in if I could, Dan. Go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, Dan. I'm quite aware of those signs. I know they are like 10 by 20 feet billboard size, and they do depict graphically the clearance that motorists shall allow bicyclists. The clearances of, like, say, 5 feet for 50 mile an hour, so wind gusts. I know that law quite well. I was instrumental in getting through legislation. It was enacted January 1st of 09. And I also saw the letter that came back from DOT Commissioner Chris Clement about how that pilot program is apt to be rolled out in other regions around the state. I think it's fantastic to get the word out there. It's definitely a major concern. We're doing what we can to get the word out. When the law was first enacted, we spent quite a few $1,000s on radio PSAs, but I know I reach still a small segment of the population.
Sure, but, you know, you do what you can. Do you want to jump in there, too, Pat Moody, with AAA?
Yeah, you know, the state is really collaborating, the DOT specifically, pulling together all kinds of groups, both public and private, in a plan, really, to address this and many other traffic safety issues. And it's a strategic highway safety plan. And the plan is actually NewHampshireDrivingTowardsZero.com. Anybody can get on and see what they're doing. And one of the things is really dialing in on vulnerable roadway users and helping to identify strategies to help with this type of situation. And I'm wondering, and I wouldn't doubt the fact that maybe this plan that was brought to them for the signage is part of this strategic highway safety plan. So this, for all folks in New Hampshire, it really is a good idea to jump onto this website, see what is going on around the state, and see how you can possibly help out and share some of the responsibility for spreading the word.
Wow. Well, Dan, again, sorry for your loss there, and thank you very much. Did you want to jump in there?
Yeah, I'm very proud of the Department of Transportation and our commissioner for that letter. I did see that letter yesterday. This is a positive signage. This is signage that is not offensive to anybody, and it's going to be allowed within the state right-of-way and select locations on a trial basis. So we're excited about the three-foot rule signing.
Dan, thanks a lot for calling in. Again, our number 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And gentlemen, lots of emails here that I'd love to share with you. I think I'll start with Andrew. He says, could you ask your guests how we deal with the problems that designated bike lanes cause for cyclists? I'm a cyclist who regularly commutes to work by bicycle, and I have serious reservations about bike lanes because drivers often think that the existence of a bike lane cedes the cyclist's right to the road. Just this past week, I witnessed the problem firsthand. There was a bike lane on one side of the road, but a family was riding legally and safely in the breakdown lane on the opposite side of the road with traffic. Drivers were honking and yelling bike lane at them angrily. Andrew, thanks for the call. Boy, can you help me figure that one out, Larry?
Yeah, this is a common problem that even the American Association of Highway and Transportation Officials understands is when you provide a separate facility, whether it be a bike lane or a bike path, it does become muddled, especially you think about a bicyclist trying to make a left turn from a bike lane. That means the bicyclist has to move out of that lane into traffic and make a left turn into an intersection or a driveway. So, yeah, I completely understand. I have about 3,000 miles of bicycling over the last year, and when you get that much experience, you begin to understand that bike lanes and bike paths are not necessarily going to solve all the problems.
What does solve the problem?
Well, it's really the five E's that we promote. Sure, there's the engineering, but we also have education, encouragement, evaluation, and enforcement. So I think we need all five ingredients to solve the problem.
Here's another email from Richard. He says, I've been a bike commuter for 25 years and a driver for 34. In both cases, I do my best to stop at red lights, obey the speed limit, stay in my lane. Like motorists, cyclists can be impatient and inattentive to the rules. Richard says, one difference, though, a one-ton motor vehicle is far more deadly to pedestrians, cyclists, and other drivers. So I'd favor much more aggressive enforcement of all, emphasis his, traffic laws, including the 3-foot rule, and especially the speed limit. What do you think about Richard's comment there? Dave?
Well, to be sure, the enforcement of the rules, that's one of the E's that we talked about before. And it's up to the police departments to help us with that level of enforcement. Unfortunately, the police department's overworked, underpaid, understaffed, and they can't be everywhere. And also, it can't be just a he said, she said type of a scenario to take any action. So sometimes it results in the fact that there's police involvement after there's a crash resulting in an injury, so there's something to do about it. Not just, hey, this person buzzed me by 8 inches off my handlebars, then you should be giving me a minimum of 3 feet. So it's where do we go from there? How can we enforce everything all the time? The resources just aren't there to do it.
All right. Well, more of your emails after a short break and phone calls. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Our phone number is 1-800-892-6477. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page, and we'll be right back.
It's 9:39. You're listening to The Exchange on NHPR, where support comes from you, our members, and from Antioch University New England in Keene, offering master's programs in counseling and dance movement therapy. Information at antiochne.edu. And from Lake Sunapee Bank, providing banking services for every business size and need. Information online at lakesunbank.com. This is NHPR.
Today on Word of Mouth, the horse is a horse, of course, even when it's a clone. Olympic organizers declare that jockeys can't take steroids, but that their mounts can be genetically engineered copies of champions. And a 10-year-old rider from New Hampshire has the right stuff for an Olympic champ, though her pony may not be on board.
He couldn't stay on the right lead. He would fly changes whenever he felt like it, and she pushed him through it, made him do it.
Word of Mouth rides a horse of a different color, today at noon on NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, our coverage of New Hampshire's gubernatorial primary continues with Republican candidate Kevin Smith. Email us your questions for candidate Smith before the program if you'd like. Exchange@nhpr.org is the address. And then be sure to join us tomorrow morning live at 9. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at some of the conflicts that come up between bicycles and cars, some of the solutions. Our guests are talking about education, engineering, and enforcement. Let's hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. What sorts of conflicts have you seen when you're on two wheels or on four? Do you think that enforcement should be tougher on renegade bicyclists? What about motorists? Could police keep a tougher eye on motorists who do not treat cyclists well? What about the roads? Would some of these tensions dissipate if the roads really did have more room for everybody? Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And gentlemen, before we go back to our listeners, Pat Moody, I want to turn back to this idea about better roads would solve a lot of problems. And certainly there are some roads in Concord where there's a lovely shoulder and there's no problem for, you know, bicyclists or pedestrians or runners or cars or anybody. But look, money is tight. You know that better than anybody probably, Pat. So what are some solutions to improve the roads for everybody that don't cost a lot of money?
You know, I think most of the improvements, most of the engineering improvements are going to cost resources. And that's where we come into the biggest challenges, where we're trying to fix our roads, our bridges, with resources that we have when our roads and our bridges are deteriorating quicker than our funding is coming in. So it's a super, super problem that we need to address. There's no easy solution, no easy answer for it. As far as other low cost, there are low cost measures, not no cost measures, but low cost measures, doing things like the sharrows, which are putting road sections that kind of little markings on the road instead of the actual bike lane that help dedicate or at least inform motorists that that is an area where you might expect to see bicyclist. So something like that. And then also, you know, it's not just the engineering, it's also that enforcement. We've talked about that as well.
So. A little paint then goes a long way.
Yeah. And, you know, the one other thing I just wanted to mention real quick is I just looked up after hearing about that unfortunate fatality, I just looked up the numbers from last year and this year, and it appears that New Hampshire's having a good year this year in terms of fatalities, with so far, year-to-date, as of August 13th, no adult bicyclists have been killed and no child bicyclists have been killed, compared to three adults in 2011 and one child. So that doesn't say anything about all the injuries that are happening out there, but it does show that we're making improvement on the fatality side.
Right, right. Now, I appreciate you bringing those numbers up. Dave, and then back to our listeners.
Yeah, just to pick it up a little bit more from what Pat was saying, the idea of improvements on the roadways, yes, you know, the Complete Streets program, which is a national incentive, it was actually proposed in the transportation bill but dropped because of monetary aspects. But something else that can be done locally within all communities in the states, and states like Arizona have this in place, it's simply a matter of the states and communities following what's called the AASHTO guidelines. It's American Association of State and Highway Transportation. It's something as simple as the lane width of a road, how wide the lanes are striped. If there's space left on the side of the road for a bicyclist to use the shoulder, it becomes safer. And also, the traffic calming, a narrower lane, striped lane, tends to make motorists go slower, okay, just because it appears to be narrower, giving a little more room for bicyclists. It doesn't cost anything to put the stripe down in a different position.
Interesting. So again, you can go a long way with a little bucket of paint.
Right. And one key thing to remember is that when these guidelines are followed, motor vehicle crashes, not bicycle, motor vehicle crashes are reduced by 25% because the lanes are more compatible, slower, and people can get along together.
Wow. So improvement, a win-win-win.
Yeah, it doesn't cost them anything to put stripe down where
right.
It does a good job.
Let's take some more calls. And calling from Northwood is Clayton. Hi, Clayton. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, Laura. Thanks very much for taking my call. And I've really appreciated what Pat and Dave have said this morning, because I'm learning stuff, even though I've been a cyclist, rediscovered it as an adult probably 25 years ago. But I bike as often as I can on a weekly basis, and actually until the snow flies. I've just moved back to New Hampshire from Maine and have been an active member of the Bicycle Coalition of Maine, And I wonder if New Hampshire has a similar organization that does a heck of a lot to educate motorists and cyclists statewide and even on a national level. Also, I've ridden on the American Lung Association's Trek Across Maine for a number of years, 20-plus years now. And those towns that see 2,000-plus cyclists go through on a three-day trip are certainly used to seeing us around. And I think that the more educated cyclists who are on the road riding as ambassadors of the sport will help educate the motor vehicle operators to our behaviors.
Okay. Thanks a lot for calling in. I think, Clayton, you made Dave's day because I know he would love to tell you about his organization. Go ahead.
Clayton, great question. Thank you so much on that. Bike Coalition of Maine is a great organization. I've been tied together with them for a while. Here in New Hampshire, we have, again, Bike Walk Alliance New Hampshire, BWANH.org. I'm co-founder of that back in 2004. It's modeled much like Bike Coalition of Maine. We are working with the state, obviously DOT, driver's ed instructors, Department of Motor Vehicles, you name it. Check out our website. You'll see all the things we're involved with. But yes, we're definitely in tune with that.
All right, Clayton, thanks for calling in.
Yeah, Clayton, if I could chime in here. You mentioned you're an ambassador of the sport, and that's true. We want people to be an ambassador of the sport, but we also want people to be ambassadors of the means of transportation. We want to see bicycling as a means of transportation. We want to encourage it as a means of transportation. So, yeah, ambassadors of the sport and also ambassadors of transportation.
Our number is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Here's an email, gentlemen, that I'd like to share with you, and Pat Moody, maybe get your thoughts. It's from Steve, who says, who pays? We talked earlier about road improvements. So he says, who pays? If bicycles use the roads and bike lanes, shouldn't bicyclists have to pay for some of the fee for use of the roads? Cars pay a gas tax, for instance. Can an excise tax be levied on bicycles? Steve, it's a great question. What do you think, Pat?
You know, there is federal funding, and I know they just changed the way the federal funding comes into the state. And now it's instead of being dedicated solely for this purpose, it's now up to the state's discretion. You guys can correct me if I'm wrong, where those dollars are spent, whether it be to increase and fix the infrastructure for biking and pedestrians, or whether it be diverted to other purposes. So, that's a piece of it. Our tax money is, but it's no, I guess, specific user fee like the taxes that the gas taxes like the caller mentioned or the emailer mentioned.
Steve, thanks for that question. Larry wants to jump in real quick.
Well, bicyclists are also motorists. They're already paying registration fees, and it's really counterproductive to suggest this to a motorist, well, if you get on your bicycle, we're gonna make you pay more. Really, the bicycle's using less space. It's a smaller footprint. So I'm not sure that charging bicyclists a fee really is going to be productive in the long run. So who pays? I think the bicyclist pays as a motorist, if nothing else.
Well, and there are probably a few bicyclists who don't pay as motorists, but you're saying kind of what you said earlier, Larry, motorists should be thanking bicyclists for taking less cars off the road. I don't know if Steve, our emailer, would agree with that, but that's your point. Is that correct?
Yes.
All right. Let's take another call. This is Craig in Candia. Hi, Craig. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi there. I just want to bring up one small frustrating point for cyclists, and that is traffic lights. Most traffic lights these days are computerized, and they take weight to set them off. And particularly when you're making a left-hand turn at a traffic light, you can wait there and wait there until the system lets you go, which may be never, so you have to get out there and just do it.
You know, Craig,
any advice they might have?
I have had the exact same problem. Thank you so much for bringing that up. Real quick to you, Dave.
Traffic signals not tripping for a bicyclist, it's been a common problem for many, many years. And believe it or not, it's not weight. It's a matter of either magnetic induction or radio frequency for the coils that are embedded in the ground. It's a matter of disturbing the radio frequency of the field. The basic rule of thumb is if you get to a light and it does not change within one cycle, after it gets into that second cycle, safe to do so, go through it. Safe to do so.
Well, Craig, it's a great point and one I've wondered about. Gentlemen, a couple more emails that I want to run through with you. This is from Chris in Concord. Just a thank you for bringing this issue to the public forum. I've been riding and selling bicycles in New Hampshire for 15 years. I've seen my fair share of drivers and bicyclists not following the laws. Fortunately, I have not seen anything other than frayed tempers. Chris says, I would like to see bicycling reintroduced into grammar schools. I learned about basic bicycle rules in fifth grade. If youngsters learned about bikes early, I think they would have a better chance of respecting them as they grow up and get their licenses. Chris, great point. Pat, do you want to take that? Pat Moody?
Sure. I think he makes a good point. And I do know that a lot of the local law enforcement agencies take it upon themselves to get out there and visit schools and other community groups, host rodeos. I've even dressed up in a giant teddy bear mascot, gone out with law enforcement in Maine. And
did you ride a bike while you were dressed?
No. It was actually Buckle Bear. So we talked about seatbelt safety and about the laws of riding your bicycle and making sure that the helmets fit properly and wearing the right gear and paying attention when they're out there on the road. So it is important, and just you get so much competing factors when it comes to getting into the school systems. It's always so challenging trying to get in there with any traffic safety message, but so important to the safety of our young folks.
Well, it's interesting because he talks about it in the schools, and I know just based on my own experience as a parent, they have these days where you can come if you want to. They'll have bike safety day every year, Larry, and I'm looking at you for your thoughts on this, but it's not required. You don't have to go to Bike Safety Day.
I think Dave Topham does have a program where it's basically part of the curriculum, and I'll let him talk about that a little bit more. But I've also had several opportunities to I've had a Head Start program in Manchester call me. I've been to a program with very young children three times. And I agree with you, Chris. The place to start is with the next generation. I even had a group of homeschoolers call me one time, and I assisted them in some bicycle engineering that they were trying to do. In fact, it was related to tripping signals at the intersections.
So, all right. Well, thanks for the email, Chris. And a couple more emails I want to share with you, gentlemen, as we close out. But before we do, a question for you, Dave, I think. You talked earlier about fellow bikers policing fellow bikers. You know, you see a guy who's a road warrior every day at the same time, same place, and you say, hey, you should alert the police about this person. What about cars policing cars? If you notice on your daily commute, or once in a while, cars acting aggressively after cyclists. There have been stories about drivers throwing things at cyclists. I have been shouted at on my bicycle, which kind of throws you and you're afraid you're going to fall off your bike. Just as bad as the road warrior bicyclist that you described earlier. What about that? I mean, I know law enforcement resources are thin, but are cars responsible for maybe policing bad behavior by fellow motorists?
That would be a nice move. It could be done. You know, road rage cuts into the effect there. And obviously there is action taken against people who engage in road rage. I'd say still the best, if it's a routine, let the motorist basically call it into the local police department and take action. I would like to just very briefly branch back to the education aspect. I'm involved, as Larry is also, with the Safe Routes to School program in New Hampshire. We have targeted and we have a train the trainers program for teachers in grades 4 and 5. So as again, if those kids get the proper level of education, and we're rolling out more instructors all the time through this Safe Routes to School funded program, so it doesn't cost the schools anything. They can work with us to get more instructors in, to get more bicyclists trained how to handle the bikes safely as they move up in the years, and they become better motorists. As motorists, then they'll know how to interact with other bicyclists.
Here's an email from Dan who says, distracted and impatient drivers are the ones causing the majority of injury and death on the road by pulling out in front of cyclists or running them over from behind. It's not cyclists disobeying road rules causing the carnage. Just look around at other drivers. You see people using cell phones, talking to passengers, eating and drinking, speeding, cutting off other vehicles. If reducing injury and death on the road is the objective, it's the motor vehicle operators who need the education. Pat Moody, I've heard other cyclists say, look, don't spend your time with signs telling bicyclists not to ride too abreast. Do something about distracted drivers, you know, texting and cell phones and so forth. What do you think, Pat?
Yeah, I think distracted driving is absolutely a major concern. We've seen Secretary LaHood and the federal DOT come down on it in the last 2 or 3 years. They've done huge national distracted driving summits. They've changed the laws in just about every state in the country, including New Hampshire, where it's now illegal to text while driving. So we have people doing a lot of things behind the wheel that they shouldn't be, instead of focusing on their primary job. When they take their eyes and mind off the road, bad things happen. And when they're sharing the road with other vehicles, and it might be an experienced cyclist or it might be a child that isn't reacting the way they think they should react, and they take their eyes off them for a half a second, then we have tragedy. So we do need to get a handle on this distracted driving thing. We've done legislation. We need to do enforcement and continue to hammer away at the education.
Distracted driving, Larry, big priority at New Hampshire Department of Transportation, not just for cyclists but for everybody.
Yeah, I know the Department of Transportation has recently joined the Driving Towards Zero campaign. I'm actually not familiar enough with it to understand the emphasis that they have on distracted driving. But, yes, we support the law, especially the new texting law.
Well, I want to just close out with an email from Jason, who says, I live in a rural part of New Hampshire, so while driving, I often encounter farm equipment, private snowplows, etc. on the road. Jason says, I treat bicyclists like I treat this sort of thing. With patience, it's a virtue. Jason, a great way to end our program today. Thank you so much for that email. And Dave Topham, thank you for coming in. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. All. Great to be here.
Dave Topham, director of the Bike Walk Alliance of New Hampshire. Pat Moody, thank you for joining us as well.
Hey, thank you. And remember, school's open. Drive carefully.
Pat Moody, manager of public affairs and traffic safety for AAA Northern New England. And Larry Keniston, good to see you. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you, Laura.
Larry Keniston, Bicycle and Pedestrian Coordinator for the New Hampshire Department of Transportation. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer today is Mike Danielli. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange is now on Facebook. Become a fan of our Facebook page. You can learn more about upcoming shows, get extra links and material. Our executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy. Good.